This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Welcome back to Kelly and Company, Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald. We are the hosts of the show. Hey, thanks a lot for being with us wherever you are. And if you picked up our book of the month and listened to it and had a good read of it, great. Thank you for playing along with us and enjoying great books recommended and that we get a chance to talk a little bit about. So kind of give you that spoiler alert if you haven't read it yet. Now I turn things over as Ramya presides over this month's edition of our book club.
All right, Kels, thank you very much. And yes, the book club is going to commence now. Thank you. This is our chance and yours to really get into the books that we like, we don't like. And today's book for discussion is Girls Burn Brighter, written by Shabba Rao and recommended by Kamini Radhan, who's here on the panel to discuss this book with us. And it is fresh Kamini, because I finished the book last night and boy, what an ending, or lack thereof, I should say. So looking forward to talking it over with you. And Kamini, before we get into the deep dive of the book, tell us why you recommended this one.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's an interesting question. I'm not even sure if I would recommend it, but if I were to recommend it, which I did, I think it was just so shockingly outrageous, just the story itself and the situations in the book. I just feel like it was something that I think people should read, because these things can and do happen in real life. Not all of it, but some of it, or a lot of it.
Yeah, and it's a lot to digest all in one book. I totally, you know, that's what I take from the word outrageous. Like, oh my gosh, it's happening and more is happening and more. And it seems to never end in terms of like the heartbreak and the tragedies in the novel. Everything feels very endless. So some of the themes that we kind of faced in while listening to the book is poverty, shame, abuse, helplessness. But amongst all this, we did see this kind of fondness and determination of friendship between two women. And those are our protagonists, Purnima and Savita. So Kamini, what about the friendship stood out to you? If we put all the sad stuff and don't focus on that for a second, what about the friendship was really powerful?
I feel that it was just the time that they had to bond. And that's what stayed with them. And I feel that as two women, I don't think they previously had those bonding times or situations in the past. So when they met each other and they bonded together and they became friends, I feel that they wanted to hold on to that, because they also probably didn't think that that would happen again with others. And they really felt that it was the bond between two women, and they wanted to hold on to that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because we heard mentions of, you know, family members, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, but it wasn't really there. We were pulled into the bond with the two of them.
And if I may say, it's hard in a book because sometimes those characters are just superfluous, right? And we don't give them anything to do. Other times, and somebody not familiar with culture or situation, you wonder, is this relationship, because of course, not having any of these, nobody. You know, you don't run into any other relationships in the story close.
Exactly.
Well, nobody's close to anybody, right? Now, again, that might muddle down the book, the story itself. But the two ladies, it is so far and away a special bond that they search for each other. Well, one particularly, but neither forget the other.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the bond, like you say, throughout the book that makes it even... To me, it's really as harsh as I don't think they'd be alive without having each other, even in memory, to kind of keep going with life. Yeah. Okay, so a huge part of this book for me, and I'm sure for both of you as well, all three of us identify as either blind, partially sighted, low vision. So let's talk about the cruelty and shame around disability. that was depicted in this book. So both of our protagonists, Purnima and Savita, acquired disabilities through harsh realities, okay, abuse. And were exposed to the reactions that people have when they see the two of them. Like, literally, you know, we're talking about acid burns and an amputated hand, okay? So the reality of the two of those things happening was, first of all, through abuse. But you get to see how people react when they see Purnima's face, or when they see, as they refer to as Savita's stump, right? So how socially unacceptable it is to be disabled when you're reading this book really, really hits you, and how culturally how people react to the disabilities. Kelly, tell me how the exposure to disability through these lens really affected you when you were reading.
Well, of course, I wonder how people are going to treat people. Right from the beginning, we learned that it's you know, like, people are frowned upon. People are seen as a lesser individual in society, even down to the bartering system of relationships that is depicted in the book. Well, you're worthless, or well, you're more likely to take because you're in a more desperate situation because you're disabled. Even from your partner, you know, women clearly don't have the same rights as men do, but if you're a disabled person, male then female, there's that pecking order included there. So I found that, as you mentioned, Ramya, the disgust at some people as they saw an obvious disability was shown. And it wasn't just the character saying due to self-consciousness, but we also saw the fact that people would make do with the tolerance of that individual, whether it be in a relationship or in a sexual moment in the story, like there were horrible things done. And, you know, as much as we sit here and say, oh, the person was looked at with such disgust, well, you know, still, as we sickeningly
see, they'll tolerate you.
They'll tolerate you for, you know, gratification. And it just, you had to stop. And I'm sure some people just put the book away. Some people, because it makes you sick.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think a lot of people would have a hard time with this book and just the things that happen. And it's very gruesome.
It is. And Kamini, Kelly talked about, you know, the two women and their disabilities, and I was highlighting that too. But one of the men that Purnima was engaged to was described of having an idiosyncrasy. Okay, this is the way they literally put it in the book.
It later that's the word I was looking for.
Yes, her husband, it was the man she marries.
Exactly. And then later we find out, because we had no idea and she had no idea what this idiosyncrasy was. And it later turned out it was disability related. He was he had a few fingers or parts of fingers missing in one hand. And, you know, it was so brutal to me. Like, I can't get over the fact with the disability representation, because, you know, she didn't even get to meet the guy before she was force married to him, right?
And he was cruel to her too.
He was cruel to her. Yeah. But the fact that, like, nobody knew the shortcomings of this guy would end up being a disability, and they hid it so well. Why do you think the author portrayed it this way, Kamini? Did that feel realistic to you?
It kind of did, because I feel like it was definitely done on purpose, because maybe she would have rejected him, and that might have created more problems on top, and they really, really needed her to get married. So I think they did the best that they could to hide him. He wouldn't even come see her at all. The first time she meets him is at the marriage altar. Figures out his fingers. But what was also very interesting to me was that the way she reacted, and that just tells me that even as women and just people in our culture in general, we're trained to expect perfection. So when we see something that's not right, we're just really taken aback. We really don't like it.
Well, yeah, because at this point, she didn't have the physical disability herself, the acid burns that come later in the book. But she reacted to his fingers. And again, disgust is probably the right word. She was disgusted by his physical disability.
Yeah. And it was really a way of showing that disrespect, that is such a theme through it. However, we also learn about the gifts that, Punima, for example, her being able to handle the accounting numbers as she stumbled across that, then getting it, and so many times the persons, the characters, you know, the making of saris, and so the skill that still had not necessarily came to the forefront in the story, but it did assist. But we as the reader get to see these intelligent gifts that you have to see something, because otherwise it's such despair. But everyone has some talent. Everyone has gifts.
Yeah. And it can't just be the perseverance, right? Because both women, they persevere, they persevere, they go through life over and over and over again, and they keep stumbling and falling and bashing their face in, like life keeps throwing things at them, and they keep persevering. But that can't be it. There's no other silver lining. It's very depressing to think about. But Kelly, one of the big disappointments for me was that almost every male man we met in this book turned out to leave either a very harsh negative impression, or, you know, was a part of some abusive figure, or you know, something along those lines, right? And I'm even racking my brain right now to think of an example where a man really was a good thing. It was a good impression to have a man in this book, but a lot of the men weren't. So how did that sit with you as a reader?
There was one.
There was one? Which one was it for you?
Yes. There was one man that I felt like he did what he could. That was Mohan in the second half of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Mohan, I feel like he had a lot of, mental damage from growing up in the family that he grew up in, just because of the expectations and the things that were done. But I feel like he's a good person. He's trying to stay a good man, but it's hard coming from the family and the society that he's coming from. But he did help in a way. And I feel like towards the end of the book, he just said, excuse my language, screw it, but he's not going to bother with what his family is going to do to him or think or say. He just really wanted to help these women.
And I think that was due to the women. I think the women helped him see things about himself in that capacity.
Yes.
But what I felt with the men, they were cruel, the men that a lot of men that were depicted, but they were of non-value. Like, they were people you would just say, what benefit are you? You don't stand up for you as a person. You do nothing but bully. Why are you around? The kindest man that seemed to be was the man that was run into at the coffee shop near the end of the story and offered to give Sabitha a ride,
breakfast.
Right? When she was getting the breakfast. And, we don't see that character for long. He's just a short character into the story.
Yes.
But at least you had a belief that, because you're anticipating, what's this clown going to do? What is
exactly
a horrible things going to happen? And unfortunately, it led to horrible things happening. But, it was that kind of thing. At least you saw something. But the male's non-value. Horrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the power dynamic I felt for the majority of the book was in the hands of the males and the men. Exactly. There was one portion of the book where the mother-in-law, I can't remember the guy's name, but Purnima's husband at the time, his mom was kind of pulling the strings around, and that was a little bit of a twist.
Well, and her husband did nothing. Like he didn't want to get involved, but yet, and that I found funny because he was a very timid man. Whatever, didn't want to get involved. But as you mentioned, men were so cruel to the women in the story.
Yes.
So I found that a little hard to deal with in the book. You either had a guy who was just, I'm hiding behind the bushes, or a guy jumping out ready to hurt people. Like that part I had a tough time with too.
Yeah. Did the stranger that Savitha met, the couple who gave her a ride, also near the end, near the last quarter of the book, did that person and the tale they were telling, how did that sit with you? Kamini, was that a memorable moment for you?
Definitely. I was, the whole time he was telling her that story, I'm thinking, was that him?
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if that was him in the story he was telling, but it probably wasn't, but that was definitely an interesting part of the book.
Yeah, I was wondering too.
People.
Which
they were good people, the husband and the wife.
Yeah, there was also something eerie about that whole interaction, but
it
just can't put my finger on what it was. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, really wonderful. Thank you for recommending this book for us, Kamini. There's so many themes to get to. And honestly, I feel like you can reread this book and put another focus on it. Keep switching lens. Yeah. Lots of it. To me, that it was because they were two young women, right? Young girls. It started at like 16, very this young. Whole journey. And it's really heartbreaking for me that this whole thing was around very, very young people and just felt like a kind of a hopeless tale. I appreciate you coming on to talk about it with us, Kamini, and hopefully looking forward to more recommendations from you from in the future.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me on. It was great.
Kamini Radhan here to join us and talk about Girls Burn Brighter by Shaba Rao. For next month, we're going to be talking about another book. It's called The Girl with Nine Wigs. And this is a memoir by Sophie Vanderstaff, released in 2015 and recommended to us by Caroline Bordeaux. So I'll give you a little bit of a synopsis on the book. Sophie is 21 when she's diagnosed with a rare aggressive form of cancer. A striking, fun-loving student, her world is reduced overnight to the sterile confines of a hospital. But within these walls, Sophie discovers a whole new world of white coats, gossiping nurses, and sexy doctors of shared rooms, hair loss, and eyebrow pencils. As wigs become a crucial part of Sophie's life, she reclaims a sense of self-expression. Each of Sophie's nine wigs makes her feel stronger and gives her a distinct personality. And that's why they each have their own name: Stella, Sue, Daisy, Blondie, Pletna, Uma, Pam, Lydia, and Bebe. There's a bit of Sophie in all of them, and they reveal as much as they hide. Sophie is determined to be much more than a cancer patient. We're going to talk about this on Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. That's the last Tuesday of November. Thanks for Caroline for recommending this one for us and looking forward to reading it.
And remember, folks, you can recommend 1-866-509-4545, 1-866, I keep doing that, 4055, 1-866-509-4545 if you wish to recommend the book too. Come on, tongue, work. We'd love to get your recommendations. And Rum, it sounds like another one where a narrator will probably be the star of this one. Do we know if it's a Daisy audiobook?
It is. It's available in human narrated on Sela as well as Audible. Awesome. But I got to find out if the narrator is Sophie herself.
Okay. It'll be interesting because it sounds like there's a real opening there for different types of voice work and things like that. If you like studying that kind of stuff, should be an interesting read that way. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. When we return with the show, we'll see what's coming up tomorrow on Now with Dave Brown. Stand by. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.